Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 154, entitled, How to Finally Get a Six-Pack, Improve Your Energy, Clear Up Your Skin, and Build Muscle Mass the Right Way, I talked to Dr. Stephen Cabral. Dr. Stephen Cabral is a world-renowned naturopathic doctor, and in today's episode, Dr. Cabral talks about a number of men's health questions and talks about how to optimize your health. He covers diet, sleep, exercise, and the functional tests you can take right now and at home to figure out hidden areas of your health that may be holding you back, and of course, how you can improve them. Dr. Cabral covers the science and practicality of being healthy, sick-free, and disease-free, and what we can do today to ensure we're living the best life possible. If you're wondering how to get six-pack abs, improve your energy, clear up your skin, build muscle the right way, and drastically improve your health and well-being fast, check this episode out now. You're going to love it. Hey, I just wanted to mention a few of the key resources we mentioned in this episode can be found at elitemanmagazine.com/Cabral. This includes some of the important tests to consider taking and some of the other health-related protocols that Dr. Cabral talks about in this fantastic episode. I've partnered up with Dr. Cabral as an affiliate because I truly believe in his work and wholeheartedly think he's one of the best naturopathic doctors in the world. I'd not recommend his work if I didn't believe it could really help many, many people. So with that said, consider taking a look around his store and perhaps getting one or two of the functional tests we talk about in this episode. Just do know I get a small commission, which of course goes back into producing the show if you choose to get anything. If not, that's totally cool. I completely understand. I just wanted to give you the heads up and let you know where to go if you're interested. Again, it's elitemanmagazine.com/Cabral, C-A-B-R-A-L. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is a repeat guest who was on the show a while back, Dr. Stephen Cabral. Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you back, man. I was talking to you a few minutes ago, and you know, there's a lot of changes since I think the last time we spoke on the show. Just between both your site and mine and the podcast, a lot of growth, a lot of cool things happening. So I'm excited to continue the conversation and kind of catch up.
Absolutely.
Today, I want to focus on a number of health-related topics, just kind of general men's health topics, things that I've noticed guys talking about in our group, the Elite Man Mastermind group, and some questions that I get routinely in email. So I think you're the perfect guy to do it. Real quickly, for those who and by the way, guys, if you haven't checked out the first episode, make sure you go back. I forget the exact number, but I'll add it to the show notes and make sure I link it up. But check out Steven's first episode on the podcast, which was phenomenal, when you get a chance after this one. But for those who haven't heard that episode yet, just quickly for, you know, 30 seconds, just kind of give them the rundown of what it is you do and exactly how you got to this point of being a naturopathic doctor.
Sure. So I'm a board certified naturopathic doctor. I have a private practice in Boston, Massachusetts, and we also work with people literally all over the world virtually by practicing functional medicine, naturopathic medicine. So I got into it because really out of necessity, you know, growing up, I had obviously no plans, I don't think, growing up in Medford, Massachusetts, to become a naturopathic doctor, and not even, you know, would have no idea what that would have been at the time anyway. But I got really sick. I got really sick as a 17-year-old, and that was essentially the end of my sports career. That was the end of, you know, really my life before as I knew it. I came down with a bunch of different illnesses and symptoms that no doctor could figure out. And again, some of the best doctors in the world are right here in Boston, Massachusetts. And since there was nothing really wrong with my blood work, they had no idea how to treat me. So that led me on essentially a 5-year to almost 10 years of searching everything, like really throughout the world. Led me to become a naturopathic doctor and do my internships in China, India, Sri Lanka, Europe, and the U.S. And through all of those studies, I was able to figure out what was wrong with me, and now I help people rebalance their health issues as well.
Cool. I love your story, by the way, and that's kind of why I like having you repeated all the time when I do see you. It's just – it's so cool. Like you had this unknown condition at 17. Every, I think you said five doctors looked at you as some of the best doctors in the world. They couldn't figure it out. They didn't know what to do. Then you turned to a functional naturopathic doctor,
And, you know, through his kooky ways, as, you know, a lot of people from the outside would think, like, this guy, what is he doing? You've gone to the best doctors in the world. There's obviously no hope. What are you going to do with your life? But this other guy who turned to other natural ways of healing you, healing the body, was able to figure out your condition and get you to heal up. And then in turn, not only did he do that, but I think a lot of things are blessings in disguise. This was a blessing in disguise in your life, and it motivated you to, you know, take this path of helping others and becoming your own great naturopathic doctor and, you know, on your own. So I love the story. By the way, what was it? Did you ever figure out exactly what was the condition or conditions that you had at the time?
Yeah. So believe it or not, it took a functional medicine doctor 20 years ago. And again, that was very rare 20 years ago.
Yeah.
To look at the subclinical levels. And so it was them. And I, you know, from the outside, it's like, oh, well, what is this? But really what they do is naturopathic doctors, functional medicine doctors, of course, now all of this is proven by science over the past 20 years. And eventually, you know, conventional medicine is catching up, but you can test subclinical levels through urine, saliva here, and you can figure out what's going on with the body. So after I found out those results, I would take them back to my PCP and my specialist. And it wasn't just five or six doctors. I actually went to over 20 different doctors and specialists all throughout Boston.
Wow.
And, you know, some of them, that the head, literally the head of chief of staff at MGH, which is arguably the number one, number two hospital in the world. And they couldn't figure it out. But what was the eventual diagnosis is what came out was something called myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is brutal. I mean, it's like having the flu every day of your life. And when you do any extra exercise, and again, I was big in exercise, you would come down with these flu-like symptoms. And also diagnosed with Addison's disease, which is very low cortisol output, low hormones, low testosterone, low output of essentially all of my hormones. And to top that off, I had the beginnings of type 2 diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis. But I always tell people the good news is I was at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, that's it. I could not go any lower. I was depressed. I was anxious. Really felt like my life was over. And before that, I was just a really energetic-based person. I had everything taken from me. So I was frustrated. I was angry. I was upset. But now, like you said, it's a true blessing in disguise. I've never felt better. I've never had more energy. My hormones are better than ever. And this is 20-plus years later. So, you know, it's strange how the world works. And if you can use that adversity and you can turn it around and make something good of it, and that's what I'm trying to do right now, is pay it forward.
Yeah, I love it. What was the term? Myalgic encephalitis?
Myalgic encephalomyelitis.
Encephalomyelitis. Yes.
It's inflammation through the entire body. Yeah,
wow.
It's almost like your nervous system is on fire. And you just, anything exacerbates it, any extra stress. I remember literally in college, played a game of pickup basketball. I used to love to play basketball. And it was an intense game. And after that game, we played for about 45 minutes. I was sick for over a week. And I'm not talking about sick, just normal symptoms. This is like flu-like, wiped out. And at the same time, I'm trying to study. I'm trying to be a good student, go out with my friends. I mean, it was a tough time.
Yeah, wow, that sucks, man. I mean, I can just only imagine how tough that is for a 17-year-old active guy who's, you know, in shape to be wiped out for a week from playing pickup basketball. I mean, that's just devastating. But like I said, man, it is a blessing in disguise. And the more I look at this stuff, the more I do my own research into naturopathic functional medicine, you know, healing the body and that sort of thing, the more I realize just how powerful the body really is at healing itself. When you fix all the underlying causes, when you, you know, fix the diet, when you fix the inflammation, when you fix your environment and put all the right keys in it to optimizing your health, essentially any disease, any chronic condition that you're having can be erased. I mean, just the power of the body itself is incredible. And I think more and more people have to be aware of that.
I completely agree, and that's why I tell people all the time, there's really no such thing as disease as we call it. We give things a name. So, I mean, we call things like rheumatoid arthritis, but really, why do we say that? Well, we give a name to a collection of symptoms, and then with that collection of symptoms, we can bill insurance, we can prescribe medication, and that's really it. And everybody feels like, okay, good, they figured me out. They figured out I had this thing. But, you know, even when I was diagnosed with Addison's disease, well, they put me on a cortisol-based medication, and a blood pressure medication actually increased my blood pressure so I wouldn't be lightheaded and dizzy and have brain fog all the time. But that wasn't a cure. That was just, you know, replacing essentially just, you know, maybe something I was low on through a synthetic-based form and not allowing my body to heal itself. So what I tell people is that really when you look at, and again, you can test these things, this is real science. I mean, we only use clinical-based science and research. And what happens is the body is essentially suffering from one of two things. One is you have a toxicity. So right now there's over 77,000 man-made chemicals in the environment. We're not told about them. We don't know a lot about them except maybe like plastics, or every once in a while we hear about like, you know, bisphenol A. It's like, okay, well, that's something in plastics. We shouldn't use that. So we can get rid of that. But then there's the next toxin. So we have toxins that are in our body that our body works hard to eliminate. And then we also have deficiencies. And over time, we become deficient maybe in B vitamins, maybe in certain neurotransmitters, whatever it might be. And so our job is to essentially figure out what you have too little of and replace that. And then to figure out what you have too much of in terms of a toxicity or what's not working well enough to clean out the body. And we take that out. And if we can do that, I really believe that anyone right now, literally anyone, can heal their body.
Yeah, I love it, man. Steven, let's dive into some of the ways that you can optimize your health right now. Like, I know you run a number of tests, which I'll get into that in a few moments. But I know you run a number of tests which kind of help people optimize different ways and protocols in their body, different systems in their body, which are really cool. You can kind of see, like you said a minute ago, it's the science behind it. Like, you know, going into the 21st century, we can actually measure a lot of these previously unmeasurable variables in the body and figure out like what parts of the body you want to heal. Diving into just kind of one of those things, do you have some tips in general for guys to take right now to optimize, say, their diet? I know it's a lot. It's a very complicated subject, and there's sort of a lot to it. But are there specific things that they can do right now to make sure they're putting in their body the right materials to optimize their health?
Sure. Without a doubt, because I know right now, you know, keto is popular and really low carb is popular. And so the issue is always have to ask ourselves is, okay, you know, how did it get popular? Why did it get popular? And what's the science really behind it? So if you look at something really like a keto-based diet, which is typically 75% or so fat, what we're talking about is, okay, why did the research come about? Okay, it came about because there's some pretty good research that cancer cells thrive off of sugar. But we're also talking about it being used with cancer-based patients. We're not talking about your average person. So we look at it for your average person, and we look at getting away from a foundational-based diet. A foundational-based diet is what I'm essentially saying is all the diets from the longest-lived people, the longest-lived people around the world, the predominance of their diet came from produce, which essentially is fruits and vegetables. Now, if we look at it from like a really just like outside perspective, like a 30,000-foot view looking down, the earth would be covered in vegetation. And as a human with no weapons, no whatever, it would be extremely difficult to get that many animal products, to get that much, you know, concentrated fat, any one of those specific things. But around you, especially living near the equator, you would have access to fruits, vegetables, vegetation. And also, they're the only foods that are really brightly colored for the most part. Again, there's always deviations from this. But in those brightly colored foods, that's why, you know, we talk about eating a rainbow of colors. Every single different one of those colors provides your body with different antioxidants and phenols that helps you prevent cancer. So if we're talking about what's the best diet to prevent cancer, to give you more energy, to replace all the nutrients in your body, it's actually a predominantly plant-based diet. It doesn't mean you can't eat some protein. It doesn't mean you can't eat some animal protein or fish or any one of those things, because you can. It just means that 60 to 80% of your diet by volume, when you look at your plate, more than half of your plate should be vegetables. And then we can get into, should they be cooked? Should they be raw? You know, that's a more in-depth topic. But it's only those, you know, those vegetables with that type of antioxidants, that type of nutrition, that's going to give your body exactly what it needs to heal. And that's the truth. And again, we can look at this all through research, but the Mediterranean-based diet, some form of that at least has to be the foundation of a good human nutrition.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of – and what do you think of that movie, by the way, that just came out, I don't know, a few months back? I forget exactly the name, but it's talking all about – the vegetarian diet and the war basically against protein and how protein is actually bad for you. And you know, this kind of American stand now where everyone's talking about how great protein is and, you know, this protein supplements. And but yeah, I forget the name of the
– it might have been What the Health?
Yeah, exactly.
That you're talking about?
Yeah, so okay. What's the – there's a lot of controversy behind that. What's the deal with that?
I love documentaries, but every documentary pretty much has an agenda. They're trying to get a point across. I don't think that's bad. So, you know, it took me so long to get well that my ego, everything was just crushed. So I said, you know what? whoever's right, and that's it. That's why I studied all over the world. I went to China, Netherlands, you know, literally all over to study. And the reason I did that, as I said, whoever has it right, whoever's, because I worked as a resident and intern in these clinics and hospitals, and I said, whoever's getting people well, that's what I'm going to do for medicine. That's how I'm going to help people. And what I found was that everyone actually was helping people get well, but not everyone. So like they were helping a lot of people, but not everyone got well. And I said, this is, you know, this is interesting. So every form of medicine works. However, you have to know when to apply it with who. And that's when nutrition matters. So, you know, you have to so I read all the research on the veganism, and I read all the research on paleo and primal and everything, keto. And I said, yeah, there's a reason why all of these things can be used. Then I have to decide, should this be used in the short term? And if so, okay, good. Like, meaning for our body transformation nutrition plan, we are low carb, mainly just vegetables, good protein, good fat. But then that doesn't last forever. We transition people off of that to then increasing their carbohydrate load to their body's limit. So we're actually using something called bioindividuality. So in terms of protein, I do agree. I mean, I used to be into natural bodybuilding. Once I overcame my issues, I'm like, I can't wait to get back in the gym, get into natural bodybuilding. I was eating like 280 to 300 plus grams of protein a day. That actually started to make me sick again. Like that's too much. Your body's producing too much of the ammonia, too much of the waste. It increases IGF-1 levels. And yes, that will give you big muscles, but at the same time, it also increases cancer risk because it will also increase tumor-based growth. So usually we go overboard. Keto is a very good example of a diet going overboard in one way. Super high protein is another example of going way too high in one direction. What we love is the media hype, and then eventually it falls from grace and we come back down to a normal-based diet, which is predominantly plant-based, good protein. Most people do recommend, and I'm in agreement with this, if you need a place to start, about 0.8 grams per pound of body weight in terms of protein, or kilograms as a place to start. Easier way to think about that is simply take your body weight, divide it in half. That's the minimum that you should be getting per day, maybe working up to your maximum of what you have for lean body mass per day. And again, it can be tweaked for each person, but certainly going over that is pretty much unnecessary, even for a hard gainer. And we can talk about that as well if you'd like.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. That's kind of, you know, one of the things that I get a lot of as well, question-wise, like how much protein should I have? Guys, a lot of guys, especially like me, I think you're probably roughly the same size as me. You know, pretty short a guy I am, 5'7" or so, about 160 pounds. So, you know, growing up for me especially, it's always been a big thing hitting the gym and trying to get as big as possible naturally. So, yeah, protein consumption has been huge for me. And getting as big as I can, optimizing my muscles and you know, mass. But the more I look at it, kind of like you, the more I realize that, you know, that it's not necessarily a healthy thing in the long run. And I think guys like me who are hard gainers, who don't put on weight easily, who are kind of smaller, that's one of the things they wonder about. Like, how much protein should I have? Is this healthy to take long term? Is my inflammation caused by all this protein I'm taking in? And, you know, should I have more carbs, veggies especially, you know? So, yeah, I think that's a good place. I think that's a good conversation to have for sure.
That, and also, you know, it's the understanding that the more protein you take in, the more water you have to start to drink. So it's really important, like vital for your kidney health and flushing a lot of the toxins from the protein, especially if it's meat-based, you know, out of your system. So for me, my goal was to really get to close to 200 pounds and, you know, really build my body up big. But the problem was, again, like I talked about before, it did create extra inflammation. A few of the winters, I actually got pneumonia, and I'm like, how am I getting pneumonia when I'm doing everything right? And I just had a weakened immune system. Part of that is, again, it's not the only thing, but part of it would have been the massive amount of, well, not only protein, but calories I was taking in, which would have been over 4,000 calories per day. Now I'm more interested in being healthy, being lean, feeling good, feeling like I can now play sports and do martial arts, things that I love to do. So I've settled in at the right weight for me, which is probably, you know, right around 170 pounds. And I feel great at that weight. So it's different for each person. It's also kind of like maturing into the mindset where you don't need to have necessarily the 18-inch arms, and that you can feel good with your body type, you know, which might be the ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph, and just, you know, I always preach that create your own best body. Don't create your friend's body. Don't create the cover of another magazine you saw. Make your body the best it can be, and that's really what you should strive for. Get away from the ego-based side of you that says, oh, I won't be happy until I achieve this, because, you know, in the long run, that's not worth your time or energy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've settled into that kind of philosophy the last couple of years. Like I've lost maybe 10, 15 pounds since, you know, being in, I think 175 was like real good max size for me. Like I looked, you know, not felt good, not necessarily, but looked good and was at my kind of best looking for, like mass wise, but I wasn't as healthy as I am right now as far as like, you know, overall health. And I think that's much more important. And like you said, like kind of just going to what you're naturally sort of inclined to do and being happy with how you look, I think is the better approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from there, just making sure that your body fat percentage for most men is between 14 and 18%, no matter what weight you're at, because that is going to be for overall health and reduction of certain things like cancer and diabetes, and just having a smaller waist is not even vanity wise. Like that's actually just a good health thing. So, you know, if you can't see the top two abs, at least I think that's a good place to start. I mean, that's not, again, not vanity. It's just very important for your overall health. And guys just have to worry more about cardiovascular based risk than women do. And so really important to focus on those things as well.
If you do take in 60 to 80% of your foods right now, even in they're mostly veggies, what percentage is about protein? What percentage is fat, the remaining percentage?
So again, like this will be channeled whether if we're talking about like body types. So the endomorph would be the guy who typically who was just born with very big calves, right? And larger forearms, more of a rounder head, a shorter neck, more like rounder, robust chest and torso. You know, that body type is going to need less protein because they're more anabolic, and they actually need less starch because they're more prone to turning that starch, would be like your sweet potatoes, your yams, your rice, whatever it might be, oatmeal, into more body fat because they're going to store that body fat and actually use that as a fuel source. Whereas your ectomorph, well, they need protein. There's no doubt about that, but they can't digest it as well. They have a weaker digestive system because of being in something called more of the sympathetic nervous system, which we can talk about if you want. That's more of the fight or flight. And they need more glucose. They actually need more carbs. So that's why there's no perfect diet, but their carbs should be more of the yes, some cooked vegetables and some sweet potatoes and just more of those starches because their body runs more on glucose. Very rarely would they become diabetic or type 2 diabetic because their body just churns through sugar. They become hypoglycemic without the carbs and more maybe more frequent feedings. But, you know, in general, I know we all need a place to start. So we're talking about 60% or so, two-thirds of your diet from definitely from fruits and vegetables. Again, the ectomorph would do more of the berries and the fruits, where the endomorph, they would definitely do more of the vegetables. Protein, well, if we talk about it, you know, from a statistic of the longest-lived populations, they always kept their protein under 15%. And that could be vegan, vegetarian. We'll call vegetarian for our sake, maybe non-meat, maybe some fish, maybe some eggs every once in a while. I'm not a proponent of dairy. And again, we can chat about why if you'd like. Or it could be meat, right? So what we're looking at is all of those populations, whether they knew it or not, they stayed healthier by consuming a little less protein. Now, it didn't mean no protein, because you should still take in, for the average guy, 60 grams of protein per day. I mean, that's still 20 grams over three meals. So you still do need protein. And again, most guys who are active are going to need much more than 60 grams of protein. So I don't want to downplay the significance of protein, but we're just looking at it, you know, over the course of what's your total caloric intake, what's your total diet, that type of thing, and how active you are. And then fat, you know, fat's going to be the rest. And for most people, that might be around, let's say, 20%, 25%. And again, you can do blood testing or genetic testing, which we do, and it can actually look at your ApoE blood type. And it's not the blood type diet, it's the ApoEB. And it tells you for some people who have it's called a 4 allele, if they take in more than 10 to 15% of their diet from fat, from dietary fat, especially saturated fat, again, that's why there's no perfect diet, they actually increase their risk for Alzheimer's, for dementia, and other inflammatory-based disease, as well as cardiovascular. Now, other groups that have a 2 allele can eat up to 35% fat, and they're not affected in the same way. So it's really interesting when you start to look in-depth at the body and use these state-of-the-art-based lab tests to customize a plan for each person.
Yeah, I'm actually – someone reached out to me a few, I think, months now back, and I'm in the midst of getting some of my DNA tested. And it's like a fitness – I forget the name. We'll have it on the show eventually, though, because I wanted to bring the guy on, the founder of the of the company, which I think is really fascinating. But they basically test a bunch of different genes in your body and see which exercises, which foods you should be taking, and what kind of body is naturally inclined to be optimal at, functioning optimal at. And then they kind of just give you a plan of like maybe what you should follow, general guidelines essentially to what you should follow to kind of stay with, you know, the genes that you were inherited with and kind of go along that line. Because I think a lot of guys unknowingly, and, you know, this is just kind of, why would they know any better at this point? But a lot of guys, I think, unknowingly go against what they're naturally supposed to be functioning best at, and that kind of hurts them in the long run. Whereas if they just tweak a few things and kind of go with what they, you know, their genes are telling them, they can be a lot healthier in the long run and make things work a lot smoother.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the labs we run. It's literally a 99-page report on the individual that gives you all of this data. And I mean, it's remarkable. Again, like we don't own any of these labs. Like, we just use the best of the best. That's it. So I'm not promoting a particular lab, you know, in general, but it will tell you, believe it or not, some people do better with a little bit more aerobic based cardio, meaning like a 50-50 resistance to aerobic. And that means that doing all interval based training, which of course I love and promote as, you know, someone who's in the fitness industry as well. But believe it or not, people do well with more of an oxygen-based training, which would be the aerobic-based capacity. So, I mean, the more data, the better. I mean, really, I think it's phenomenal, and we'll only see more of this in the future, in my belief.
Hey, just a quick reminder to sign yourself up for the Elite Man newsletter if you haven't yet. Get behind-the-scenes access to bonus tips, strategies, and techniques to becoming the best man you can be, exclusively on the Elite Man newsletter. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign yourself up right now. Again, that's elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. Quickly jumping back to what you mentioned a couple minutes ago, I think the optimum body fat percentage just came to mind. Was 14 to 18% for men. Do you recommend going any lower than that? Like, some of these bodybuilders will get down to like 5%, or like some of the top athletes, wrestlers, those guys will be hovering around 5% all the way up to 10%. Is that a healthy range to actually be in if you want to optimize your health, or is that too much where you're cutting out too much body fat and actually can have some negative side effects?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so the ectomorph, the kind of that leaner body type, will naturally maintain much less body fat. They might be sub 10%, naturally going to be leaner and burning that off. So what you don't want to do is become too catabolic. So catabolic means that your body actually starts to tap into muscle tissue for fuel because you're just running at a deficit. So that's important to look at. Most guys do want to get below 14%, at least during the summertime, because you're not going to see your abs at above 14%. You might just see those top two. But to really start to see the two below that, you're going to have to get down to around 10 to 12%. And then to see all your abs, you will have to be most likely sub 10%. Now, above 6%, you're still fine. You really are. It's when you start to get sub 6%, 5% or so. And we work with body transform. We work with, you know, natural figure competitors, body, you know, whatever the body transformation is that people are looking to do, is it's fine to do. But believe it or not, like, even with the most competitive athletes that we work with, they're only at 3% to 5% for about 48 hours to maybe 72 hours. And then they jump right back up because they're at danger of starting to lose more of that muscle tissue, and also your body using organ tissue, believe it or not, for fuel as well.
Wow. Yeah, like, I mean, definitely comes to mind, like, these wrestlers, these UFC fighters, MMA guys who cut weight, 20, 30 pounds in like 48 hours just to make weight to fight at a certain weight class. But then they jump back up, they hydrate again. And even these fitness competitors, you know, these weightlifters, these competitive body figure athletes, they'll do kind of the same thing. Like, for a show, they'll cut a ton of weight just to get that like lean cut up look and then go right back up again. So I think you're right, like, hovering around 10% if you really want to do it is probably best. But going to 5% where you're starting to eat at your organs for energy is probably not a healthy way to do it.
No, not at all. And I think for most guys, trying to get to about 10% for the summertime, and then maybe add a few pounds as you might be trying to put on more muscle, or maybe not having to be as strict about your diet during the wintertime, to get back up to 14%, 15%, is perfectly acceptable. Because, you know, just keep in mind that it's not a dramatic change in weight. So, for example, let's say your average 150, just because I want to do easy math for myself, 150-pound guy, you know, about every pound and a half is going to be about 1% body weight. So we can look at it like that, meaning that we can look at typically if we're it's difficult to do, but you can really try to just tap into muscle, or I should say body fat itself. So for a guy to drop 4% in that range, he would only need to lose about 6 pounds, 7 pounds maximum on that 150-pound frame. 200 pounds, well, now you're talking about 8 pounds, 10 pounds or so. And the goal is to just to make sure you do it slowly and naturally so that you are not, again, stripping your body of muscle and getting the nutrients that you need, because you don't want to be exhausted while you're dieting or anything like that. So, again, you just lower your carbs enough. You increase maybe your workout intensity or your cardio, whatever. You know, whatever's going to tweak it there. And a big thing that I found is that guys will actually be lean, but they're holding weight just around the belly button. And the issue with that is maybe insulin sensitivity or blood sugar-based issues, or they're eating foods that they're sensitive to. So we do food sensitivity testing as well. And that's one thing I just have to say, because I'll tell you, this is what did it for me. Even as lean as I would get, I was like, why can I not lose that little circle around my belly button? Like, it makes no sense to me. I cut out dairy. All of a sudden, it was gone within literally 2 weeks. 2 weeks, it was just gone. Wow. And what happened was my body was holding on to subcutaneous water just because of inflammation from me eating dairy. When I eliminated that, so if you just want to eliminate dairy just as a test, you don't need it in your diet to be healthy. And again, I got phenomenal results. So that's why we do food sensitivity testing for that as well. But that was the difference maker for me. It allowed me to get to exactly where I wanted to be in terms of body transformation.
Wow, that's really cool, man. So I guess the recipe here for if you want to get like those last six packs, which I have the bottom row of six pack abs. I mean, I have like a good four pack. A lot of guys have the four pack too, but getting that last set to come in to get the six pack, there's a lot you can do in terms of cutting down your body fat, lowering it, getting around 10%. But if you're still kind of, you know, hung up on it, if it's still stubborn and it's not, you know, popping in like you want it to, I think the food test thing, and I mentioned this to you before, I'm definitely want to take the food sensitivities test anyways, just for a number of inflammational things and kind of learning what I'm, because it's really cool that it basically your body has allergic reactions to things. Like if you go to the restaurant and you have seafood and you're allergic to seafood, you know, your lips swell up, you get hives right away, like immediately. But with these food sensitivities, the 24 to 72 hours, typically you have these sort of allergies to foods that you're not even aware about because they come at a prolonged period afterwards. And so, you know, it causes inflammation in the body. It weakens your immune system, so a number of things that you're not even aware of and you can't really trace or pinpoint to what it is. But this food sensitivities test actually identifies, what is it, like 94 of the most common foods that you have, and actually tells you which foods are causing this damage to your body, to this inflammation. And then, of course, if you're trying to get, you know, the six-pack abs, that body fat to store in that place and for you to get bloated and different things like that. So taking a test like that, I think, is, you know, incredibly helpful, not even just for body fat and getting those six-packs to come in if you're having trouble, but also just, you know, lowering your inflammation across your body and improving your immune system, right?
Absolutely correct. And that's just called the difference between an IgE sensitivity, which would be someone that eats maybe shellfish or lobster, and they get the hives, they get the maybe brain fog, irritability, rash, any of those things, where the delayed reaction, like you were talking about. So for example, when I ate dairy, I didn't get any gas, bloating, cramping, anything like that. I actually felt totally fine. But the problem was, it was just like you said, 24, 48, 72 hours later, I got this low-level inflammation and it caused a little bit of fatigue, maybe like mid-afternoon, and I would just start to – my skin wouldn't be as clear as it should be, and I would hold a little bit of water. And again, that's just systemic-based inflammation. So the food sensitivity test is a great intro to functional medicine testing. And we're not talking about, again, life-threatening allergies that would cause anaphylaxis, but what we are talking about is these are the things that create chronic disease. They really are. It's a slow, gradual decline in life. Like people, autoimmune issues, you know, imbalances, weight gain, it doesn't happen overnight. It is like this just filling up, you know, of the bucket, and when it starts to overflow, well, that's when you start to see your dis-ease state, as we say. You know, that's when the imbalance happens.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I love this test. I think it's so cool. And then the interesting thing about it too is that there's so many foods on that list that most people would never even consider potentially having a negative effect on their health. Like, you know, going down the line that you test for turkey, you test for chicken, you test for eggs, you test for garlic, apples, like a number of fruits, veggies, like just normal foods that are seemingly healthy and seemingly going to help you feel better and help your health. But if you have some kind of insensitivity to it, it actually is causing more damage than good. And so I think it's just fascinating to be able to finally like see what foods you should be having and what foods you should probably eliminate.
Exactly. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I think a lot of people will actually be surprised at what might pop up. And believe it or not, one of those foods that a lot of us live on is eggs. And eggs is the number three food sensitivity out there. So, you know, if you're someone that consumes a lot of eggs, I think you really owe it to yourself to find out if you're having a sensitivity to eggs.
Yeah. What is the other one and two most common ones?
Dairy's number one, gluten, and then eggs. And I would say eggs is tied essentially for number two with gluten that a lot of people don't know about. And I know one thing that we've chatted about before is just egg whites, believe it or not, are more of a sensitivity than egg yolks. So a lot of times guys have been told to maybe get rid of the yolks, or again, now the kind of yolks are making a comeback. But believe it or not, yeah, it's there's actually more antigens in the white because the white is what eventually becomes the chicken. So there's more of those. It's not more protein, but it's different types of proteins. And that's what we look at that cause immune-based sensitivities.
What are a couple of the other tests you recommend guys maybe think about taking soon to optimize their health? Like, this is one I think is just incredible, and everyone should take it at some point to figure out what foods you should have. Diet is so important for your health, and you know, you're having food every single day multiple times. It makes sense to figure out what food you should be putting in, what food you should be eliminating. What are a couple of the other tests you do and perform that you think guys would benefit from tremendously as well?
Yeah, I think if any guy is really – if let's say, put it this way, if you're over 40 years old and you haven't checked your omega-3 inflammatory levels, I consider that mandatory as well. Because, again, that's why functional medicine, it's not the future of medicine because it's already here. But functional medicine is really just personalized medicine. I mean, that's the truth, is that if you run an omega-3 test and you find out that your arachidonic acid levels, which is just the higher inflammatory omega-6s, are much higher, more than like a 3-to-1 or definitely more than a 5-to-1, you're a chance for cardiovascular risk. You're even if your cholesterol is fine, remember half the people that have heart attacks have normal cholesterol. So we can't blame it just on cholesterol. And the other thing is we can give you the exact dosage, whether it's through good omega-based fish or, you know, if you want to do vegan-based varieties, you can do that. But we can get you up to what's called a 9% saturation of omega-3s in your blood. And when we do that, it actually decreases cardiovascular death by all causes by 90%. Wow. Which is insane. I mean, like, not, just dropped it by 90% by simply increasing your omega-3 levels to balance out your omega-6s. And omega-6s shouldn't be completely gotten rid of. They should just be in balance like most things in your body with that. So that's the first lab. And then, you know, if guys are worried about their hormone levels, like you're starting to feel, you know, just lower ambition, lower drive, maybe some brain fog, not as much get up and go, lower libido, all of those things – to run a simple at-home saliva test, because these are all at-home tests. We literally mail them all over the U.S., Canada, U.K. And the reason why that's important is that by doing a saliva test, and again, all of these are used by organizations all over the world, literally all over the world. They do hair testing in the Olympics. They do blood testing, saliva. All these things, again, can be done right at home. But with the saliva testing, it's easy to do. You actually look at your diurnal rhythm, like how much cortisol you're producing in the morning. Do you produce a little less, and then, it, you know, is it dropping at night so you can get to a deep sleep? Because if you have high cortisol at night, well, it's implicated in things like Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's. It also doesn't allow you to get into a deep rejuvenated sleep, which means you're going to age faster. And then at the same time, we'll look at testosterone. We'll figure out why testosterone might not be optimal no matter what age you are by looking at all the other hormones as well. And that's because a lot of times, you know, you go to your doctor, you run your testosterone. First of all, you're not even looking at free testosterone. And then you're also looking at it in isolation. And testosterone, just like everything else in your body, does not work in isolation. It works in balance with all the other hormones. So those are two great labs. There's so many others, but definitely recommend those.
Yeah, real quickly, I want to ask about another lab in a second that I think is really cool that you guys have. But really quickly, what is the general guidelines for testosterone levels, free testosterone, and then total testosterone and then free testosterone, which is the one that you can use? What are the general levels for that? Because that's usually the biggest one that guys think about is like, how much testosterone do I need? Because, you know, they hear about it all the time on commercials and different things as far as like health related things go. Testosterone is kind of the big one that they think about. What is the total testosterone and then active or free testosterone that they should kind of shoot for?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so what I want to do is, again, like my big thing, whether, you know, I'm teaching a seminar, a podcast, or we're working with someone individually, is just really to trying to educate them. Meaning that if you have your results from when you were like 20 years old, well, then you know what your peak testosterone is going to be, because every guy is a little bit different. So I have guys in my practice. And so when you look at your blood lab, another reason why I'm giving it like this is because different labs are different. Meaning, like, let's say you look at Genova. Let's say you look at diagnostics, and let's say you look at ZRT, all these different labs, they're going to have different parameters. And so what I like to say is you should be at 50% or better for your testosterone levels. However, let's just say a guy, when he was 20 years old, his max testosterone was 60% of total max. Okay, well, he's probably going to be feeling great at 60%, whereas another guy, maybe he's like the mesomorph body type, he might have been at close to 100% of that lab range level. So when he falls to the other guy's 60%, he actually feels terrible. And so what we have to look at is that bioindividuality. Now, I use a test that does saliva-based, and it uses it's all free testosterone. So again, free testosterone is more powerful to look at than total testosterone. However, total testosterone still matters, because you can look at, well, what happened to it? Did it get bound up with this thing called sex hormone binding globulin? I look at the free. So what I do is I look at the lab, and I want a guy, if he's under 50 years old, to be at 100 points or more. And then if a guy is, let's say, over 55, 60, I still want them above an 80. And that's going to give you optimal testosterone, all the benefits that come with it, which is essentially, you know, everything we want, from the ambition, the drive, the take charge, you know, good libido, good stamina, good strength, ability to put on muscle. So that's what I look at. But remember, never in isolation, because you have to look at your DHEA, and you need to look at your cortisol levels and estrogen levels as well, because we can help guys naturally increase that testosterone, but we don't want to see it convert to estrogen, which would then put them at risk for either gynecomastia, which is kind of growing more breast tissue on a guy, and nobody wants that, right? And and the other part is that it can then lead to dihydrotestosterone, which would make a guy lose his hair or grow hair on his back, which again is not on a high point for most guys.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely an individual marker. I think, you know, each guy varies, especially with age groups. But I think you're right. Like, looking at your optimal level, say when you're in your 20s, is probably a good guideline to shoot for and try to get as close to that as possible as you get older. And then, of course, there's some natural ways you can increase your testosterone and different supplements and things you can take. And obviously improving your diet and, you know, sleep will help with that as well. You mentioned something actually really interesting too, the hair loss thing. Is that, in your opinion, is that something that can be reversed with optimizing? I mean, we mentioned this kind of at the beginning of the show with, like, optimizing your body, optimizing your health, and making sure all your systems in your body are functioning correctly. Do you think that's the result? Do you think that's a symptom of something being off in the body? And if so, can that be corrected as well if you fix all the body's processes?
So it's really interesting, because this is, I have no idea how, but it's essentially unknown in conventional medicine. But in all the other forms of medicine, especially Ayurvedic medicine, you know which body types, even from a teenager, who's going to lose their hair and who's not. And that's because the Pitta body type, which matches up with the mesomorph, they usually have lighter colored hair. It's oftentimes, again, it depends also on culture, because in cultures where everyone's hair is dark, well, then obviously no one's going to have lighter brown hair or blondish hair. But again, that also doesn't mean if you have blonde hair, you're going to lose it. It's a finer hair type. It's a thinner hair that will predominantly lose that hair. It's more of the mesomorph. We can get into that if you want, but it's that mesomorph body type, or that Pitta body type. But also, even if you aren't that body type, you could still lose your hair. And that's because due to stress, due to inflammation in the body, due to catabolism, which is a lack of the body being able to build itself back up, because your hair is essentially protein, you can lose your hair as well. So what we've been able to do in my practice is help guys to keep the hair they have, to stop the hair loss, to maybe regrow a little bit. But I've never seen anything anywhere, even through all my studies overseas as well, that once you've lost your hair, that you can grow it back. And that's because a lot of times we're missing now that follicle, that bulb that will actually allow that hair growth. Do I think it could happen in the future? Maybe. Of course, everyone's working on it, because that would literally be a $1 trillion industry. But for now, I mean, I'm always honest with people. We can help you keep the hair you have through good nutrition, through all those nutrients, through decreasing stress levels, through making sure that you're not converting testosterone to estrogen, but difficult to put the hair back on the head.
That makes a lot of sense. It's I appreciate the honesty there too, because I think a lot of guys would kind of work around that and just say, oh, you know, maybe we could. And, you know, I've heard other doctors online cover this topic as well. And they kind of say that something, I think that's a little, not necessarily like a lie, but sort of stretching of the truth, which I think you're kind of, you know, very honest and open about what is possible and what is not possible at this point. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people, when they have these problems with inflammation and et cetera, they're going to have problems with keeping and maintaining the hair they have. But so what's the mesomorph body type? Just real quickly, kind of break that down. Does that mean some people are going to lose their hair no matter what, and that's just kind of like in their genes to lose it? Or does that just mean that they're more inclined to potentially lose it?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. And so I do want to just take a step back, meaning that there are reasons why guys lose their hair, not through genetics, meaning we work with a lot of guys with alopecia, and we help them regrow their hair even if they've lost, you know, all the hair on their head. And the reason is that that's different, meaning like that was not in the genetic code. That happened because you had some type of imbalance that, yes, your genes allowed for the expression of alopecia versus maybe rheumatoid arthritis or something else. But that, again, that's a different story. Same with cancer. If you lose your hair due to cancer-based treatments, what I'm saying is that the mesomorph body type, really easy to pick out. Think about like a linebacker in football or someone like a LeBron James that, you know, you're looking at someone with broader shoulders, really, or Terrell Owens, like really good muscle tone, meaning like genetically, like that guy looks like he's on steroids. Like, how is it possible that he has abs on his abs? He has broad shoulders. He's got a really defined chest. You know, he's got glutes, hamstrings, like everything. The guy is just a specimen. That's like a mesomorph at its best. Like that's the ultimate mesomorph. Mm-hmm. But a mesomorph typically has broader shoulders. They have more of a square jaw. A lot of times they have blue eyes or green eyes. They have, again, this is also cultural as well. Yeah. They have thinner, finer hair, meaning like their hair will do whatever you want it to. There's no real waves to it or curls to it. That's for the most part the mesomorph type. They have decent calves, not huge calves, but they have nicely defined calves. They're what I like to refer to as, if that person looks like a Marine, that's what a mesomorph looks like for the most part.
Okay, cool. And those are just the people that are more inclined to lose it, right?
They are. So, so there's always this balance, right? So the ectomorph, they're naturally leaner, and so they don't have to worry about what they eat. They can eat as many carbs as they want. The mesomorph, well, they naturally put on more muscle as a guy, but the downside of the ectomorph is, well, you're catabolic, it's hard to put on weight, and you're more prone to anxiety and stress and those types of things. And the mesomorph, okay, easier to put on muscle. You can eat more protein. It just builds up more muscle in your body. You're athletic. You're all these different types of things. But, you know, downside is you're more prone to inflammation. The downside is you typically lose your hair earlier in life. And then the endomorph, well, they get to keep their hair for the most part. The endomorph, the larger body type, they have thicker, wavier hair. Their hairline actually starts lower on their head, closer to the eyebrows, of course, not all the way down to the eyebrows. But it's harder for them to lose weight. It's harder for them to get defined. You know, a mesomorph, they can get a flat stomach, but for them to see their abs would kind of be unhealthy. It really would. They just want to get that flat stomach. So, and again, these are pure of each, meaning most people aren't pure mesomorph, endomorph, or ectomorph. They're usually, let's say, like 60, 70% mesomorph, 20% endomorph, and 10% ectomorph. Like, this gets in depth, but when you know your body type, you know what you're prone to, and then what you can kind of, that's your, it's called your genotype, and your phenotype is what you become, what you've done with your life. And then you can also see, okay, what do I need to do to rebalance my body to get healthy?
Yeah, I think just kind of, you know, going back to the overall theme of this, I don't think at this point there is a way to cure or reverse completely hair loss, but I do think you can optimize sort of the hair you have and make it stronger, healthier. Going into the future, of course, you know, they got stem cell treatments, which could potentially do something. They have that gene splitting thing, which they're coming out with, you know, that, I think even Harvard or something, guys, and some of the guys in out in California just had a paper published a couple months ago where they were talking about, you know, basically the future of what our genes are going to be. You can transform genes and move them around and basically make an ideal person, which is kind of crazy in and of itself. But things like that, I think,
yeah,
the technology,
it's called CRISPR. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But the technology going forward, I think, has the potential to do it. But right now, I don't think there's anything. I think the best thing to do, of course, like we've been talking about in general, is just optimizing your health and making sure all the systems are working properly. The other test I think is really cool that you do It has something to do with the gut, though, as well, like testing out the bacteria and the different strands of, you know, bacteria in your gut and how everything works. And can you just talk about what that is and how that works specifically?
Yes, it's called the organic acids test, and that is literally, I would say, hands down, one of our top labs. It's 75 different biomarkers. It looks at any type of yeast or candida overgrowth. So a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, does that really exist? And, you know, what is it really? Well, you can lab test. You can actually see if you do have an overgrowth or not. Looks for intestinal permeability in terms of, is there any leakage of these things into the bloodstream, which then is filtered by the kidneys and comes out in the urine. We look at bacterial overgrowth in the gut. We look at beneficial bacteria. We're looking at neurotransmitter waste markers for mood, for energy, for focus. We're looking at optimal levels of ketones and fatty acids. We're looking at all of your B vitamins. So again, B vitamins are needed for hair growth and for muscle growth, for memory, for mood. We're looking at detoxification, liver-based detoxification, energy-based markers in the mitochondria. Phenomenal test, highly recommended, really big fan of that lab test as well because of the amount of data that you get from it.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think I'm gonna take that one as well. I'm gonna take the sensitivities test coming soon, the gut test, and then maybe even one of the other ones we talked about. Because I just think, you know, knowing this information is so helpful in determining, you know, what types of foods to eat, what type of supplements to take, what exercises to do, even for your DNA, which I'm gonna be getting back soon. I'm excited about that. Even your sleep schedule, like, you know, just kind of optimizing that as well. But having this information can really make a difference, and just knowing it can help you fight off some, you know, infections and colds and different chronic diseases that could potentially pop up later in life. So being as healthy as possible, I think, really starts with knowing what you're taking in now, what your body is, what your body needs to be taking in, what it functions and optimizes and runs best off of, for sure. What are your thoughts on the gut test, though, kind of related to that? What are your thoughts on supplementing with things like probiotics?
So that's when this lab test really shines, because a lot of people who have bloating and gas, indigestion, anything like that, actually shouldn't be using probiotics. And again, I'm a huge fan of probiotics, but I'm also, you know, understanding that if your gut has an overgrowth of bacteria, it does not make sense to supplement with more bacteria. So what we do first is we remove the non-beneficial strains that should be there, but not in the amount that they are right now. Once we remove those, then we start to add back in the good bacteria, the good probiotics, the strains that are meant to be there. And so that's how I recommend it. So that's why that organic acids test is a great place to start. A lot of guys will get benefit from doing something like, you know, the Clean Gut probiotic, which is something that contains Saccharomyces boulardii that helps push out a little bit of yeast, a little bit of, you know, candida that you might have gotten from taking antibiotics in the past, or alcohol, or any, you know, poor food combining. But I'm just such a big advocate of knowing your body and testing instead of guessing if you're able to, and then knowing what to do specifically for you to optimize your own health.
That's interesting. So you can actually pinpoint through this test which bacteria you have too much of, and then how would you eliminate some of these bacteria, like specific strains of bacteria from your body?
Yeah, so we have something called a Candida and Bacterial Overgrowth Protocol, and what we're doing is specifically removing the bacterial overgrowth, and a lot of times what comes with it is the yeast overgrowth. Since essentially what happens is this: if you take antibiotics or alcohol or Advil or any of these things that start to degrade the good bacteria in your gut, the yeast that's naturally there, that's always supposed to be there, and other bacteria such as Klebsiella or Clostridium, they start to overgrow because there's opportunity to. So what we do is we try to knock those down. We never eliminate them completely because we're not supposed to. Even things like, believe it or not, E. coli, which is naturally in your gut that not a lot of people know that's there, produces things like B12 and other B vitamins. So what we try to do is knock them down, and we do that through our CBO protocol, our Candida Bacterial Overgrowth Protocol. That allows things like biofilm disruptors and oregano oil, caprylic acid, and other functional medicine-based nutritional supplements to wipe them out. And then we start to replace the gut bacteria one at a time. We actually start with the Lactobacillus acidophilus and then move it in depth strain-wise. So we repopulate the gut how it was meant to be repopulated, especially the small intestine, which is supposed to be more sterile, more acidophilus-based. And the body's then allowed to get rebalanced. And then after that, we add in full spectrum, like full strain probiotics to make sure everything's repopulated. So in a nutshell, that's how we do it. It doesn't take any more than 12 weeks. We seal back up the gut wall. And people just, they make dramatic turnarounds in terms of energy, skin, vibrancy, vitality, you know, all of those things. It's just really remarkable. And I had to do that for myself to get my health back. So that's why, you know, really I implemented quite a bit in my, my private practice as well.
Cool, man. I love it. That's just really fascinating to me. And I think the more research comes out, and it, just over the last couple of years, especially the link between your gut health and your overall health in terms of how you feel every day. You said energy, you know, libido, some of the things like that. It's incredible. Immune system, obviously, but just everything is pretty much all connected and related. And I think the gut is such a huge facilitator of different conditions and feelings in the body, of feeling good or feeling bad, that, you know, optimizing that is really essential. Dr. Brawl, just one more question here. What is your best anti-aging tip? Like, guys who want to stay young, guys who want to maintain their health, who want to feel great, who want to have great energy, have a great sex life, you know, feel good, have muscles and look good and all that stuff. What is your best tip or takeaway for staying young, staying healthy, and fighting off the decline of old age?
Yeah, I would. I mean, that's a big one, right? How do we roll it all into one? But you know, the big one is, you know, hands down, it's being able to get a good quality sleep at night. So if you are not, if you're waking up throughout the night, or if it takes you more than 10, 15 minutes to fall asleep, if you're not getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, we need to optimize that. We really do. So, you know, looking at your evening cortisol levels, making sure you're not eating too close to bedtime, you know, all of these specific things. And the second part is really going back to, what would be a diet that gave you enough antioxidants to reduce inflammation and squelch free radicals, the things that oxidize in the body, and that would be a predominantly plant-based diet. That would be going to, you know, whole food-based nutrition, getting in good quality, you know, berries like blueberries and blackberries and raspberries and cherries, and then getting in good quality vegetables, trying to get in like 7 to 9 cups per day. It's not that bad. It's you know, a couple cups in your smoothie in the morning with breakfast, a couple cups of vegetables at lunch, a few more at dinner. You're going to be there. It's not going to be that bad. But the payoff, I mean, the payoff doesn't happen overnight, but literally you could look back a year from now and just say, you know, how did this happen? How do I feel better this year? I'm a year older than I did last year. And that's what I look for. So I want people to get short-term results, but at the same time, I want them to feel great each and every year. And it doesn't matter. I mean, literally, I have guys in my practice legitimately in their late 60s going into their 70s, and they could lap. I mean, they really could. They could lap guys in their mid 30s that I see around me because they're just not doing the right things. Their body's just weighed down with excess toxins and inflammation and poor hormones. So I truly believe at any age you can turn around your health and you can honestly live the life that you want.
Love it, man. Last little takeaway, send off message, and then a place you'd love our listeners to check out more about your work, Stephen.
So takeaway message for me is my podcast is The Cabral Concept, and its tagline is change your body, change your life. It's just it's imperative, and I had to go through it myself that I didn't have a life. I didn't have the motivation, the ambition, the drive to accomplish in life what I wanted to, meaning that I was going to live a life with really dramatic regrets of what I wasn't going to be able to do until I fixed my body. Because your body is, which includes your brain as well, mind and body, it carries you through life. And so if you're tired right now, if you're run down, if you're irritable, if you're moody, if you have no energy, all of these things don't allow you to be at your very best. And again, it's bio-individual. It's you, your very best, not anybody else's. Only compare yourself to you. But I want you to look back with no regrets. So my big thing is optimize your body. Do everything that you can to get this vehicle that carries you through life optimized, healthy. If you do that, I'm telling you right now, I'm telling you, you're going to have more energy than you ever thought that was possible, because you're going to create a new normal. So that's what I highly recommend. I just love people to check out my podcast. I mean, you're doing amazing work. I think this would be a good adjunct, because it's just about health. It's just about health and fitness. And I answer questions the weekend for people for the on the host calls. And that's called The Cabral Concept. And what I'll do is I will link up, if it's okay with you, at stephencabral.com/elite. And just put in all the links to labs and just really more information. I always tell people, you don't need to purchase anything through us. You can find a local practitioner. You can do whatever you want, but get the information. Get educated. And when you're educated, then you can make the right decisions for yourself.
Love it, man. Yeah, we'll definitely add that to the show notes, and we'll add that link in there as well, so guys can check out all the things we mentioned, the labs, et cetera. Just, you know, even if you don't want to get something right now, something to think about going forward. I think a lot of these labs, these tests, can really help out a ton and just improve your health in the long run and make you feel better. Like you said, energy, feeling great, waking up, jumping out of bed, and just feeling like you can do whatever you want that day because your energy is, you know, on point, I think is an awesome, awesome way to go through life. So, Steven, again, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate it. I know our guys are going to love this one. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Excellent. No, my pleasure. It was great. Appreciate it.
Just a quick reminder to go to elitemanmagazine.com/Cabral if you are interested in checking out any of the resources or tests we mentioned throughout this episode. By the way, I just ordered the organic acids test and the hair mineral analysis test, which I'm really excited to get the results back on soon. And in a week or so, I'll be ordering the food sensitivities test as well, so I can finally figure out where my lifelong eczema is stemming from, among other health benefits. Really pumped to get the results back on that as well. Again, if you're interested in optimizing your health by taking some of these tests, go to elitemanmagazine.com/Cabral. Either way, take care and talk to you soon. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.